All right, so I didn't quite use Michael's title, but I switched to Michael's title. I thought it was sufficiently boring. We could start with that. I'm going to speak first for a few minutes, then I believe Simona will speak next, and then Keith, and then we'll sit up here and we'll ask you questions. And I am partly charging my thing as a computer as we talk, because when I sit, I also want to take notes, because I'm counting on getting input from all of you, and I want to hear your thoughts. Okay, so what is this panel of ours? Okay, well, there was a letter that some of us received from Pierre Raymond last summer asking us to form a panel to talk about issues in theory. Among the things that he mentioned were we should solicit inputs from US high energy theorists on general issues which are of concern to them or to you, organize discussions of these issues at meetings leading up to the community summer study in Minneapolis, write a white paper that would be discussed at that study, and revise the paper into a report that we've published in the CSS 2013 proceedings. And as Michael says, we exist in some netherworld. We're not exactly Snowmass, and we're not exactly DPF, and I'm not sure what we are. Okay, anyway, we expanded and developed this charge a little bit. First of all, I think given, you know, where I'm going to say a few words about the funding climate, and then of course Keith and Simona will say much more and with a much more informed view. But the funding climate is challenging, and I think part of our responsibility is to articulate what is at stake? Why is it important to fund this field and this research? What is being lost as if it contracts? And we have some input from that. We have our own thoughts. But of course, I'm looking for, very much looking for input from the community, from all of you. We certainly will discuss things like funding needs for individual PIs to sustain an effective program. We will examine roles of university and national lab theory groups, but I don't think you should expect anything too dramatic from us. I'm saying this partly because this issue has been brought to our attention by a number of people, and we'll probably be commenting on a little bit, especially by Simona. And among the questions we have is to be sure that we are, at all levels, there are mechanisms to assure the funding of young researchers. Okay. So I also grew the panel membership. So the membership, unfortunately, actually, is Daniel here? So I think I'm the only one here. Unfortunately, Sally wasn't well and is not, which I had planned to come and is not here. But the members are Khalidi Babu, Sally Dawson, Lance Dixon, Steve Gottlieb, Jeff Harvey, and Daniel Whiteson, who's from here, and myself. And we have a website. I'll let you, it's on the Snowmass, it's linked to the Snowmass website. It's part of the Snowmass website. And it's a vehicle, you can also see, again see our charge, and it's a vehicle to communicate with us as well. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, what am I thinking? No, but he was supposed to be here. Yes, I'm sorry. But I don't know why I wrote you. See, I'm sorry. I'm asleep. But he had claimed he would be here, so that's why I'm kind of looking around. No, it's totally my fault. Okay. So what's at issue? The United States, I think we've actually heard this from some of the comments we heard earlier today. The U.S. has had a sustained, a vigorous high-energy physics program for many decades. Support for this effort has come principally from the DOE and the National Science Foundation, with modest additional funding from private sources. And this funding has supported several activities central to the theory effort. Okay, so training of students, salaries of postdoctoral fellows, travels to conferences and workshops, summer salaries for investigators freeing faculty from teaching responsibilities in summer months and facilitating concentrated research times, programs in the labs. And this formula, this shouldn't be a bullet, this formula has been extremely successful. The theory program in the US has arguably been second to none for many decades. Okay, with a changing funding climate, this model is under stress. Both in labs and universities, we're going to see a decline in support for graduate students. We're going to decline in support for postdoctoral fellows, severe restrictions on summer salary, on travel, excuse me, and caps, and we're already seeing caps on summer sellers. And you are welcome, I should say, to comment on the implications of any or all of these. Okay, so what has our committee been doing? So to date, we've received input from members of the community, but really I would like to see much more dealing with any and all of these issues. And as I said, the website has a mechanism to communicate with us, but you should just feel free to email me or other members of the panel. And some of the communications we receive tend to be directed. Sometimes people don't want to make everything that they're saying widely public. But please communicate with us. We've had conference calls with the DOE, with Glenn and Simona, and also with Larry Yaffe, who left the DOE recently, and with the NSF, with Keith. We've had meetings with theorists at some, not quite all, of the pre-snowmass meetings, and we will have a presence. Most of us will be present in Minneapolis. So just some preliminary thoughts on this process, and from some of the things we're hearing and our own concerns, we're deeply concerned about the implications of the funding cuts for student and postdoctoral support in particular, and the implications that that has for the future health of the field. We're certainly concerned about other activities, travel and summer support. As I've sort of indicated, we need to articulate, what is being lost to science as a result of this, what will be an atrophying of the field, and what solutions we might propose. In fairness, I should say that the agencies are supportive of a broad research program, but we will need to address in this context, and particularly with the DOE, which is sort of mission-oriented, the question of programs which sit at the boundaries of particle physics and other fields, nuclear and condensed matter in particular. And we've already received some useful input on that, but certainly we'll want more of people's thoughts. The labs, we have received input, as I said, indicated about the labs. There is concern, and I think maybe some of the statistics will appear in Simona's talk, that they draw significant resources. But we also hear and appreciate that they are unique in their level, in many of their activities, in particular in their level of support for the experimental program. Okay. Within this question of articulating what's at stake, we'll certainly make points about the role of theory, certainly in the triumph of the standard model, in our ever-improving understanding of field theory inherent to that understanding, in the calculation of rates for production and decay, for example, the Higgs, perturbative QCD calculations, theories and parameterizations for possible deviations from the standard model, theoretical understanding of heavy quark physics critical for CKM tests, and non-perturbative understanding of QCD. Okay. We'll also want to be thinking about the role of theory in the future, and certainly we'll be talking about support for the experimental program in various aspects. Okay, QCD computations, defining signals, neutrino physics, the cosmic frontier. And then beyond current experiments, okay, and I've made this like the last bullet, but it's not a minor one, and it doesn't occupy just a small fraction of the field, are questions ranging from what might lie beyond the standard model to questions at very high energy scales to foundational issues, questions in field theory and in string theory. Okay, and these are no small part of what makes this field exciting and generate public interest. Okay, it's my last bullet, but not a minimal one. So this is my last slide. Okay. I think one of our roles, and I think we hear this, and I think this is something which the agencies appreciate, is that we delineate questions, we propose possible solutions, we suggest novel phenomena that may serve as the basis for future experiments or measurements. And I've just listed a few here. These are all familiar to us. What is the origin of the great disparities in high energy scales in physics? This is the hierarchy problem, this question of naturalness, which is on all of our minds a lot these days. Why are there repetitive generations? What accounts for the hierarchical structure of quarks, the masses and mixing of the quarks? And why does the pattern of neutrino masses and mixing seem so different? And what is the energy scale associated with the generation of neutrino mass? These are topics that we've heard about, that are figured in talks today. The question of the origin of matter-antimatter asymmetry and its connection to CP violation, and the question of whether whether of what might account for this and whether it might be accessible to experiments at the energy or intensity frontiers. Okay, the identity of the dark matter, the origin of the dark energy. Okay, what is the nature of the quantum theory of gravitation? From what sort of principles or structures do the laws of nature originate? So these are referred to my last bullet on the last slide. And for which of these sorts of questions might we hope to see experimental answers in the foreseeable future? Okay, so these are the sorts of questions we are going to articulate. I'm going to quit with 25 seconds left to go. Okay, and let Simona come up and speak. And obviously, questions we'll deal with in the discussion section.
All right. I'm Simona Rolli. I'm the theory program manager at the Office of Energy Physics. And I'm going to give you an outline of our program in the office. So this is the outline of my talk. I'll just go briefly through the HEP mission. As Michael just mentioned, DOE is a mission-driven office. I'll talk about the strategy, which is pretty much what Glenn discussed this morning. So I'll go very briefly through that. And the budget for FY14. Then I'll show you some of the recent theory funding trending at labs and universities with some demographic information. And finally, I'll go through my concluding remarks, which also means basically the question I'm asking myself all the time is how we can achieve strength and competitiveness these days in very lean times. So the HEP mission, it's the following: to explore the most fundamental questions about the nature of the universe or the cosmic intensity energy frontiers of scientific discovery, and to develop the tools and instrumentation and expand that research. So HEP, of course, seeks to answer the big questions. How does mass originate? What is the word matter and not antimatter? What is dark energy, dark matter, etc.? Of course, HEP offers high-impact research opportunities for small-scale collaborations at the cosmic and intensity frontiers to the full-blown international collaborations at the LHC. From 2085, our research is organized around the three frontiers. As we heard this morning, we are co-leaders at most at the energy and cosmic frontiers. We are supposed to be the leaders at the intensity frontier. And of course, he has a strategic program in accelerator R&D, which spans the whole Office of Science, and it's driven by HEP now. The HEP budget plan, as we are envisioning, would like to put in place a comprehensive program across these three frontiers. So, as Glenn said this morning, in the next 5 years, we will have NOVA, Bell 2G-2 running at the intensity frontier, NU2 in commissioning phase, CMS and Atlas detector upgrades installed. phase one upgrades, DES, and the two big initiatives at COSMIC and Intensity Frontier, RSST and LVNE, well underway. This is the funding trend of the entire office over the past year from 1996 to 2012. And you can see, I don't know if there's a pointer. You can see here that the research budget, which is this line in blue, went up over the years, also helped by the fact that some of the facilities were ramping down. But the project, which is this green line, went down, and somehow it's been recognized that a healthy level of growth for the office is expected to have a level of funding of project of order of 20%. So somehow to renormalize within our envelope. Yes, this is a fraction of the total budget of the office. So if we want to somehow ramp up this line, something else has to give. And what has to give is research. And this is what is happening. This is one of the scenarios that we can envision for the next few years, so 12 through 23, where the research budget declines. The facility stays pretty much flat because basically the Tevatron has shut down and Fermilab is our last lab, single purpose lab left, and then the project goes up. Now there are a few hiccups on the way, like for example in next year's budget, not all the projects proposed were accepted, and so we had to shift money from projects back into research as R&D, like for example the detector upgrades. We'll get only what we call OPC money, operations money, because NMIE has not been approved yet, construction NMIE. But I mean, within these constraints, it really do not depend on us. It's more at the higher level than our office. We are still trying to fulfill that plan that I just showed on a couple of slides earlier. So this is the FY13 request, which is the presidential request that comes out generally in February. This year was April, compared to the 2012 numbers. This is the whole budget of the office, broken down by frontiers and various other items. And here you can see theoretical and computational physics, which is about 66 million, was about in 2012, down to 62 in 14. Actually, the budget that I control, as you will see later, is more of order of 50 millions because this includes also computational ECP, which is a different budget code, so to speak. One note is I'm comparing 14 to 12 because, as you may know, 13 is a continuing resolution for the whole year plus sequester cuts. So really, these numbers are almost definitive now, but it's been a real pain to get them. So this is the breakdown of the same budget by frontier. And frontier is in a wide sense because theory is considered a frontier. So let's talk about the theory budget. This is the recent breakdown between labs and universities starting in 2009. So the budget has been fluctuating between 53, 54, 52 million down to 50. In reality, we're closer to 51.5 now. You can see that there have been spikes in the university numbers. This is mostly because the early career awards have been awarded to university investigators, and this money gets added to our budget every year, and then every year that budget propagates. That, in fact, is the only piece of the budget which is protected, doesn't get the 2% cut. When somebody gets an early career, it's the same amount for 5 years, no matter what. We only had one early career the first year at a lab, and now this year we had another one. And this is the breakdown, again, between labs and university. I would like to make a comment here. There's a lot of discussion about that's going to be too little. There's going to be a lot of discussion about personnel at labs and personnel at university and the way the money is spent. You can see that at labs and university get pretty much the same, about 25 million each. But at Labs, we have personnel which is paid 12 months. So an FTE for us is a 12-month person. And at universities in general, a 2-month person. We might have cases where somebody is paid for only for 1 month. We consider it a half FTE. So if you consider the number of months equivalent, effectively, the two faculty, quote, quote, cost the same to us. It's about 55K. Now, also a consideration about budget and comparative review. Lots of people have been screaming about this budget going down and saying, well, this has gone down much more than 2%. And yes, last year and this year, budget went down more than 2%, effectively for everybody, because of the following reason. We started having comparative reviews. And with comparative review, we wanted to achieve two goals. The first was to comparatively evaluate all the groups at the same time. But the second one was to synchronize the starting date of all grants to April 1st. Why April 1st, you can ask? Well, blame the US dysfunctional budget cycle, because that is probably the only month where we have a chance that a continuing resolution will be lifted and we will have a budget. If we decided to start on November 1st, October 1st, forget about having a budget. We couldn't even put out grants. So what happened? The first three rounds of review, these grants are generally 3 years grants. We had all these grants that had originally different starting dates, November, December, January, February, you name it. And we had to bridge them all to the beginning of April. But to do that, we have to use the same pot of money of the fiscal year. So effectively, if, let's say, the groups that went to comparative review in 13 were funded in 12 at X level, in 13 there will be X times 98%, because 0.98, because there is the minus 2% cut, plus another cut, which is that amount times Z, this fraction, which is the bridge funding fraction. And Z can also go up to 25%, because there are situations where you have to fund a group almost for 6 months extra. So this could not be avoided. Things will get better starting in 15, because at that point, everybody will start on April 1st. We won't talk about bridge funding anymore. So demographics at university. I've divided the number of PIs, and by PI, I define a faculty spending 2 months of his or her research time, in three groups, by the comparative review group, I call them, because in my mind, that's how I catalog them. So the first year, we funded about 45 PI. In this year, 13, 114. In fact, for some accident, what happened is that the first year of this grant cycle, we had a fourth of the grants. The second year, we had a half of them. And then the third year, another fourth. They were distributed in this funny way. And then next year, this is what I would expect, 58 PI, considering only the groups that are currently funded. We had a few new groups, but not very much, really. A couple of groups per year that got into our portfolio, but we didn't have a surge of groups coming from different agencies. And this is also the breakdown by thrust area of research, cosmology, phenomenology, and model building, formal, and lattice. Here there is another thing. We have about 95 postdocs. The FTE is defined as 12 months, with a ratio of 0.43 per PI. And we have 122 students, again, 12 months FTE, at a ratio of 0.55 per PI. Remember these numbers because we'll compare them with labs later. Here, in fact, we have five labs which are traditionally funded by HEP. In reality, we have a little bit, but really tiny fraction of amount that goes to Los Alamos and Livermore, but these are so-called security weapons labs, so they get generally their own funding, and then they get a little bit of help from us. So I didn't include them here, but I mean, it's really a second-order correction. And we have at Fermilab, people doing cosmology and astroparticle physics, and particle physics, so two slightly different groups. and at Slack is the same. And instead, there are single groups at BNL, Berkeley, and Argonne. Total number of PI, 49. This is their breakdown. Of course, much more in phenomenology, cosmology, and lattice, and much less in formal theory, because historical people at labs were supposed to support experimental program. Postdoc, 28.5 FTE, with a ratio of 0.58 to compare to 0.43 at university. And students, DOE-supported students, there might be students that come with different fellowship, et cetera, but as you see, very small, because the lab is not a place for students. Student and postdocs at university, again, this is the breakdown of the numbers per group per year. And again, at labs and university, labs in blue, university in red. And this is the number of students, so what I just showed before. And this is their breakdown in terms of trust, research trust area. Okay, young investigators, I'm almost done. So, starting in 2010 with ARA money, the Office of Science instituted the Early Career Awards, which were modeled after the OJI, Junior Investigator Awards, of the HEP office. So OJI disappeared, now it's only Early Career. This is an Office of Science-wide program, so all the offices of the six offices receive applications. We have separate panels in each office. We form our final selection list, but then we have to compete with the other offices for the whole assignment of awards. Generally, never happened that some of our candidates didn't pass the final selection, but you never know. So in 2010, we had, in theory only, six awards out of 43 applications. Five went to universities. The first 4 years were fully funded by ARRA. The fifth year, it'll have to be picked up by the theory budget. And one lab, which was fully funded for 5 years instead. Second year, four awards out of 45, all to universities. Third year, three awards out of 23. People started realizing that the chance of success was not so great. So, and also probably there were less people hired at university. But I mean, generally, people have 10 years from their PhD so to apply. So there's still a large pool of individuals that can do it. And this year, three awards again out of 20 applications, one to a lab and two to universities. And this is the distributions in terms of research areas. So I can say that this is the most successful frontier in the Office of HEP for early careers. Compared to all the other frontiers, experimentals and detector R&D, theory is the one that gives out most of the awards, seriously. On top of that, the award money is added every year on my budget. And as I said before, it's shielded from this 2% or any other percent cut. So if I get a 5% cut, it's everything else that has to get it, but the early career is protected. Okay, comparative review and young investigators. So in general, young investigators applying to, and I'm really talking about second, third year, of a tenure track career path do well in the comparative reviews. Most of them have been funded, not at stratospheric level, because of course the situation of funding is what it is. When there are other sources of funding, including startup, precedence is given to those who do not have funding, because you know you have to make a choice. Either you keep piling up money on a few or you try to help more. My personal opinion is that submitting to both the comparative review and the early career program weakened proposals in theory. We have seen that in the last 2 years of panels, where because the Office of Science does not accept the same proposal submitted to two different FOAs. So what we saw is these people trying to divide areas, and then in a panel somebody wondering, oh, but this guy is great doing dark matter. Why there's nothing here about that? Well, because he submitted also to comparative review, and he talked about that in that proposal. So when that happened, then generally people were not successful. So you can still submit, young people can still submit to NSF and DOE early career or DOE comparative review with the same proposal. You cannot be funded by two agencies for the same scope. So one can decide later on. But my suggestion to young people, think clearly what you want to do. Don't just go after every possible funding opportunity blindly, because there are consequences. And my concluding remarks, which I really must put for thought in this audience. So I think there are a few points that the whole community, and of course Michael and his panel, will look at this issue, we might want to consider. First of all, as we said, HEP is mission driven. So HEP builds its research around the three frontiers: intensity, energy, and cosmic. And of course, there are issues for theory that might be ancillary to this type of research. So for example, at the intensity frontier, is the theory effort adequate? I'm starting hearing requests for more support of theories doing intensity frontier if we really want to be leader in this field. At the energy frontier, yes, we are co-leaders, but is the US effort comparable and competitive with the European one? Just question, I mean, it might as well be. Cosmic frontier, dark matter and dark energy are the main topics of our focus, but there are relationships with astrophysics that are not so easy to define. I mean, there are measurements that maybe come from astrophysics and have implications, especially from the theoretical point of view, for dark matter and dark energy. When these people come to a panel and theorists say, oh no, this is astrophysics, or this should not be funded, we might want to find some solution. Again, it's a problem of boundary. Also, an issue that came up recently at the cosmic frontier that has been solved very well at the energy frontier, for example, is the role of theories that now are starting being embedded in cosmic frontiers collaborations. And actually, they generally end up faring bad, both in the cosmic and theory panel, because nobody wants to claim that they are their parents. At the energy frontier, as I said, the issue was solved very well because we had theorists, especially at the LEC, being embedded for short or long-term collaborations in the collaborations, but generally keeping doing theory work. So there was no issue at funding them out of the theory budget. Also, another point to think about is the relationship with the other sectors and agencies, these boundary conditions that Michael was mentioning. Of course, we have interfaces with nuclear physics, talking about neutrino physics at low and medium energy, cross-section, Minerva experiment measurements that needs to have a comparison with the accurate theory measurements. Heavy ion physics, heavy ion is supported by the Office of Nuclear Physics. So even though there are heavy ion physicists in ATLAS and CMS, they are not supported by us. But we have applications out of holography, for example, specifically tailored to heavy ion physics, and generally synergies with the intensity frontier. The Office of Basic Energy Science, DOE, covers mostly condensed matter topics. And now, of course, there is a rebranding of string theory going into condensed matter that is also coming to us because we have young string theorists who are working on application to condensed matter applying to the HEP office, as well as BES. BES is also seeing an increase in this type of applications these days. And also computational aspects of HEP theory, like there's a recent cosmology initiative led by labs on large-scale cosmological simulations, Lattice, of course, which has always been in the realm of HEP and nuclear physics, Monte Carlo simulations, etc. And of course, the US budget climate for research is precarious, at least. The US does not rank as appealing as a place to do research as it did 10 or 15 years ago. I came to this country 20 years ago because it was a country of opportunity. I don't think I would do this now, or I would think it twice. How many offers have we seen from Zurich recently? And not only in theory, actually, in all the other frontiers. How many Monte Carlos from European groups as opposed to US? This was cited at the European strategy meeting last September. Christine Davies said that 70% of the top HEP Lattice papers have European offers. As a community, we need to concentrate on strength and competitiveness. And I think It's very good for theory, it's very good for the entire field, and we need to place ourselves in an international setting. So this might mean consolidating funding at center of excellence instead of spreading the wealth up to the point that it's impossible to do anything. The issue of labs and university has to be considered. The faculty at these places fulfill different roles. You might want to preserve people who can do research 100% of their time, since private sector R&D labs where research can be done 100% of the time are not so popular and so common anymore in this country. The bottom line is that we cannot fund everything and everybody. And also, as a side consideration, I think we should also consider how many people we train and what their perspectives are. Again, from my experience, 20 years ago in Italy, there was a surge of PhD students, everybody sent to CERN, etc. How many of them got a job in HEP? Not necessarily people need to stay in HEP, but you know, what we do, it's driven by passion. So when we have to leave this field after many years and have spent a lot of time and energies, it's a pain, especially for a young person. And that's it. Sorry, it took me so long, but I didn't even know I had to give a talk.
Not in reference to the previous talk. Okay, is there a... All right, so I'm going to, as the counterpart to Simona, I will represent what's going on at NSF. A lot of what you'll hear is similar to DOE. In a few ways, a lot of things are very different. This is a talk I originally gave, or it's adapted from a talk I gave at HEPAP recently, and that talk was about particle physics in general, not just theory. So there are other programs and other program directors as well, but I'm the person who handles theory at NSF, and so I'll focus mostly on theory and try to go quickly. So first, let me just say that NSF is the funding agency for the sciences. It's our mission is really to fund the most compelling scientific research and education without preconceived preferences as to direction or scope. Scientific inquiry for its own sake. We're not a mission-oriented agency. We don't run facilities as our primary goal. So we are really in it for the science for its own sake. That changes how we view things and how we fund things. But our modus operandi is similar in that we fund grant proposals, and we respond, therefore, to grant proposals, and we evaluate intrinsic and comparative peer review according to intellectual broader impacts. Our structure is like a little university. There's the university president. Under that, there are different colleges. These are the analogs of colleges. We call them directorates. The one that matters to us is MPS, the Mathematical and Physical Sciences Directorate. Think of it like a college of science. There have been some changes in the structure of NSF, but basically that has remained intact. That college, MPS, Mathematical Physical Sciences, has its own substructure. We call them divisions. Think of them like physics departments and other departments in a college of science. There's a division of physics. Within the physics division of physics, however, there are many sub-areas, and this is our structure. So within the division of physics, let me just point out, our new director is not Joe Damer. He is no longer there. Instead, it is Denise Caldwell. It says that she's the acting director, but actually, as of a few weeks ago, she is now the permanent new appointed director of the physics division. Currently, our deputy director is Brad Keister, who has previously handled the nuclear physics program and still does. He is currently the acting deputy director as well. We then have programs which attempt to cover the full space of physics research in the discipline of physics. So we are not like DOE, which focuses just on Office of High Energy Physics within that office. We here are covering everything. There are experimental programs, which cover all the main disciplines, and theoretical programs that cover all the main disciplines. Each one has a program director associated with it, and I'm here representing elementary particle physics, astrophysics, and cosmology, but there are others. We also have some cross-cutting programs, Physics Frontier Centers, of which the KITP here is one, and others as well. I should also point out that there are some obvious things that are not here, like condensed matter physics. Within NSF, that's part of a different division of materials research. Where is particle physics? Quite a bit. It's not only my program in theory, but it's also the experimental elementary particle physics programs, particle astrophysics program, and it, of course, is involved in all the cross-cutting areas. So it's about a third of the whole physics division, and you'll see that backed up by the budget. So particle physics is one of the several dominant components within the physics division portfolio. And we're very proud of this, and there are lots of reasons why this should be so. And here's my little elevator pitch for high energy physics, but I don't need to tell all of you why this is important. So I will skip this, but I think it's very important that we explain our field very forcefully when we're talking outside. Certainly within NSF, I do try to make the point that some things are unique about particle physics. We are really, in some sense, the inheritors of 2,000 years of the reductionist approach to science. And therefore, when we say something such as the Standard Model is nothing less than an encapsulation of all of humanity's current knowledge of the fundamental laws of physics, we're really making a very unique statement. Many branches of physics, of science in general, are exciting, but we are still the ones who are looking for and being the discoverers of new physical law at the fundamental level. There are other ways to achieve knowledge about a very complex world, but on the other hand, we are still the ones who are looking for new physical law at the fundamental level. And I think this is important. This helps make us unique. And of course, what's exciting now is that the LHC is online, and the LHC is certainly going to be one of the things that dominates the next decade, and data from the LHC will be truly transformational. And that's a word we use a lot at NSF. And this will tell us a lot about, you see my pitch right now when I try to get more funding for my program. So there is a lot of reason why LHC is going to be important, and I don't need to tell anybody here, but the end result of this will be nothing less than the establishment of the next standard model appropriate for the new energy frontier that the LHC will be exploring. But that's not all there is, of course. There is also other ways of learning about new physics, which don't involve necessarily higher energies, but also higher intensities. And also the standard model and the normal matter it describes are not all there is. Dark matter and dark energy are very important pieces of the whole universe and the energy density of the whole universe. And likewise, particle physics also has increasing synergistic connections to neighboring fields like nuclear physics in these areas that also Simona mentioned, and astrophysics and cosmology. So there are lots of many exciting developments that we can expect. So I really think because of this, a golden age for particle physics has begun, and NSF really is playing an active role in supporting these efforts. So on the theory side, so this is the program I oversee, there are main themes, I would say, over the past 3 or 4 years that have come to dominate most of the proposals. And they range from things like alternative Higgs structures and new models of dark matter, to very formal things, to very phenomenological things, even new approaches to fundamental why questions, such as one might approach through string theory techniques, new cosmologies. Also, it runs a complete range. It's a very rich intellectual program. This program, we fund 104 grants, of which 13 are career awards. We fund, amongst those 104 grants, 186 PIs and co-PIs, approximately 50 postdocs, 50 graduate students. I know DOE has a reputation of funding large university groups, but NSF does as well. In fact, we fund 29 of them, of which have 3 or more PIs. Our program also funds, in whole or in part, the Aspen Center for Physics, the LHC Theory Initiative, CTEC Collaboration with Summer Struhl, TASI. All that comes out of NSF, some of which jointly supported with DOE. Here are the university theory groups that we do fund. This is in the entire program. Some are shared with the DOE, but most of these are just uniquely NSF funded, and the others, I presume, are DOE funded. I should also mention we have an experimental particle physics program, which does lots of things and has its own program directors, and it's a big program as well, not in terms of the number of grants, but certainly in terms of the numbers of researchers involved and postdocs and graduate students. Likewise, we have an experimental particle astrophysics and cosmology program, and it has lots of efforts on all frontiers as well. And similarly, they have a number of grants, and they fund a lot of graduate students and postdocs. And of course, very important for NSF is outreach activities, and we are engaged in a lot of them, from QuarkNet and TheoryNet and the Aspen Center for Physics, which we support. A lot of different things, especially QuarkNet, which is a big effort lately, especially in particle physics. So, money. The total budget of the NSF fluctuates, but it's basically between $6 and $7 billion, which is not a lot. MPS, Mathematical, Physical, and Sciences Division, is pulling about $1.3 billion out of that $6 billion. We are certainly the largest directorate in terms of funding within the NSF. But within the NSF, that's split between the different departments, the different divisions. And physics, as you see, is the second largest. Materials research is actually the largest, but physics is the second largest at about $277 million a year. This is the total size of it, of MPS, of the physics division. You'll notice, in terms of funding, you'll notice the bump in 2009. That was the stimulus money. Other than that, it's been basically flat or rising slowly. Within the physics division, this is how much comes to particle physics, fiscal year 8, fiscal year 9, plus the stimulus, 10, 11, and 12, which is the last data, the last year for which we have actuals, because we're still running on a continuing resolution this year. Experimental, EPP, particle physics, particle astro. Here's the theory programs: experimental particle physics, theoretical astro, and cosmo. This is my budget, essentially. It's been rising slowly, approximately now $13 or $14 million a year. They're dollars? Well, I'm sorry, what's the word? No, these are actual dollars, not corrected. There hasn't been all that much inflation just in this little window here. Physics Frontier Centers often have a high particle physics component as well, especially, for example, at the KITP here. So this is also part of it. The total given to particle physics, therefore, in the physics division from all of this, hovers at approximately $100 million a year out of 300 for the whole physics division, which means that approximately 30 or 40% of the entire physics division is being devoted to particle physics, particle astrophysics in some way. If we, program directors, are aggressive, and we usually are, we try to recruit outside money from other areas within NSF. That can increase the budget occasionally very significantly, as you see, and therefore increase the total fraction that comes to particle physics quite dramatically. And just to explain what that is, there are other ways we can pull money into our own programs by nominating awards for broadening participation money, for education interdisciplinary research, physics at the information frontier, and then things with outside the physics division but elsewhere within NSF. And so if we're aggressive about this, we can usually get some nice chunk of extra money. But there's never enough. And the next few years are going to be very challenging. And protecting the core scientific program and keeping it healthy really have to be our primary concern. And so this is my final slide, and I just want to give you my personal perspective on the things I see coming as problems. I'm sorry for the somewhat negative tone, but first of all, these programs are under severe financial stress. New faculty are starting with grants of $40,000 to $50,000 per year for top people. Others get nothing. And this barely covers their summer salary. These are new assistant professors at the peak of their careers, which is why they've just been hired. And yet we're not even giving them grads or postdocs when they have all this momentum. And while startup funds exist, they rapidly are depleted within the first 3 years, and yet the ramp-up time for these grants to grow has become increasingly long, often a full decade. This is a problem. There are also emerging systemic problems. University TA cutbacks, because of the bad economy, are stranding high-energy theory grads in particular. Because unlike other fields, high-energy theory grads are especially vulnerable to local TA budgets because they often don't have RA support. So when the outside economy gets bad, independent of what's happening in the agencies, the TA budgets go down and they get hit. And we need to find a way to reinforce this talent pipeline. There are some other issues. For example, it's become lately very important to understand that when you are submitting a proposal to two different agencies, there cannot be overlaps. If you were to be funded, if you have a grant from one and a grant from the other, and it's the same proposal or the same text in the proposal, this is technically fraud. One can't do that, and especially when there are a lot of people who have regular grants, as we usually call them, from one agency and a career or early career award from the other one, that's becoming increasingly problematic. And in particular for career awards, there's also another issue which I can discuss later, which is that the DOE career awards the NSF career awards are not large enough to keep pace with the DOE career awards, and this is becoming an issue also, which a lot of young people are facing if they should be so lucky as to be in contention for both. A big issue I'm beginning to face, NSF has not yet put summer salary caps in. But this year, and I don't even have a budget yet, I don't even have a budget allocation. So this year I have made no awards yet at all. I don't even know how much money I'll have to give out. But already I can see there's no way I can even renew what I've got if I don't put in a summer salary cap. It may be severe, more severe than DOE's. It might even result in outright elimination of summer salary. This is something we need to think about. Goals for the short term and long term, if one were to be so lucky as to have extra funding, would be to establish and deploy an emergency fund for grad student support and slowly build appropriate levels of grad student support into long-term grant profiles. I also think it's critical that we establish a higher minimum floor for starting grant sizes and increase those grant sizes for mid-career physicists whose funding levels have been frozen since their junior faculty days. And then if it were possible, one would like to start some new initiatives. For example, we have the LHC Theory Initiative, but it might be interesting to start such a thing for underground science or intensity frontier. And there are other sorts of new initiatives that NSF has created. One of them is called SAVI, the Science Across Virtual Institutes. And this is supposed to be for international things where physicists could work remotely on the same common project. Well, anything related to large experiments should definitely be a prime contender for these things. I urge people to not rest on the idea, which is sometimes too often prevalent in our community, that you have your grant and you just live with that, you apply every few years. One should be in the habit of trolling the websites of the agencies, at least NSF. I can certainly say there are new funding opportunities in computing, in cyber infrastructure, in data, big data. There are lots of other places, some groups have been very aggressive and can double or triple even their total funding by applying more than just to the high energy physics program. NSF has a lot of things going on. One should look around in the agencies. We need to be more aggressive, I think, about pulling money into our field. And that starts with proposals. That starts with you. Okay, I'm available for questions, but otherwise that's all I wanted to say.
So I should say we're running late, but the vans are not going to leave until 6:30. So we have time for discussion. Maybe Michael, Keith, and Simona can come up here. But you don't have to address the questions to them. You can just say what's on your mind. So who'd like to begin?
So let me just make a comment for everybody. I think some of you already know about this. There's a group of neutrino theorists, broadly defined, that's been trying to organize and try to address some of the issues that have been raised here, including stuff that Keith said and stuff that Simona said. If anybody has ideas or complaints or suggestions, we're open to all of those. You can talk to me or you can email us, and that's just the advertisement I wanted to make. I think Mike also knows about this. We had a representative in a meeting that we had last week at Fermilab. Babu was there, and we're going to be talking to the DOE, I think, next week on Monday to see how to explore possibilities in intensity frontier theory or neutrino theory broadly defined.
I had a question for Michael regarding the stress on the individual investigators in the NSF budget. We heard from, in the case of the DOE, that there's a programmatic decision to try to increase the funding for projects at the expense of the research program. So in the case of the NSF, since you're PI driven, what is the current force right now which is putting stress on your budget and pushing it down?
I'm Keith, by the way.
I'm sorry, Keith.
Did you want it for Michael or me?
Keith, I'm
okay.
Sorry.
Okay, all right. Yes, first of all, NSF, I don't want to say unlike DOE, I'm not sure, I don't want to speak for DOE, but NSF responds to proposal. Everything comes from what we call proposal pressure. So we don't have a plan to increase the number of theorists working on this and decrease. That kind of top-down thinking is not something that is part of the DNA of NSF. However, there are increasing numbers of what is causing the pressure. For one thing, there are budget cuts. There's a sequester cut. There are other cuts that are coming. Every year there's a little bit of a cut. Secondly, there are new proposals that are coming in. Every time you look at the rumor mill and you see new faculty are getting hired, realize that there's no budget that increased that now is there to bring them into the funding pipeline. Somebody at the other end has to be squeezed out of funding, or the total goes down of the funding per PI, one or the other. Neither is really a healthy situation, but that's really the source of stress. Our field is growing in terms of total population, and yet the resources are not growing as quickly. Partly, and also budget cuts. There are budget cuts, especially in years like this year.
So I was thinking exactly about this issue of population growth. Do you have any numbers that you can give us about numbers of PIs that you try to support? Is there a definite upward trend, or?
I can fund only about 30% of the proposals that come to me. And even those are getting minimal levels. I mean, when they have a budget and they ask for something, I don't even look. It's just not relevant. It's not even possible. I'm trying to make sure that they don't get hurt too badly where they're going to lose a postdoc or a faculty position or a graduate student. My first priority is always graduate students and postdoc support. That's NSF's mission, and that's what I think is the appropriate thing to do. In a theory budget, in a theory proposal, the entire money, almost all, is going for salaries. We do not, computing, and we don't even have publication charges anymore. And then there's travel. These things are very small. So it's basically salary. Salary for postdocs, salary for graduate students, and summer salary. And that's why summer salary is now getting hit, because this is the one place where we're not eating the future. But that's not fair either, because assistant professors may need that summer salary. Their salaries are lower. They're beginning to have families that they may need to work and teach during the summer if they don't have summer salary support. So this really will impact research as well. It's not clear what to do. I'm very reluctant to put a summer salary cap on. We haven't had those in our program in 10 or 15 years, but this year it has to be. There's no way I can make the numbers work.
You gave some numbers, but they were very brief.
Yeah.
So from what I gather, you support 20 to 25% of particle theory.
Approximately, in terms of dollars. Not in terms of PIs, but in terms of
what I'm asking, in terms of dollars.
Yeah.
But in terms of so-called FTEs, as Simone explained,
right.
What is the number? You didn't give that. Could you compare what you spend?
I did show the number.
Well, you did it very fast.
Everything went fast.
Yeah.
Funding approximately 186 PIs, 50 postdocs, 50 graduate students.
But what are the PIs means in terms of FTEs?
1.0.
The way she described it?
1.0.
That's summer salaries, right?
That's one. Well, we don't have labs. NSF does not support labs.
I'm trying to get some comparison between the amount per FTE month for both agencies.
Okay.
Yeah, because you're working together. I mean, you're making, it could be that you are trying to support too much.
It is possible. And
that would help to know how much.
That's right. So the average grant size per full professor who is making serious contributions and who is rated at the top could be anywhere between $100,000 and $150,000 per person, which is not a lot.
And DOE, the comparable number is?
Okay, I showed you that average of 50, and it can go from like 20 to 150 per PI.
I think it would be easy to compare the two. You know, there's a lot of feeling to different communities as to which is it better to be on DOE or better to be on NSF. It's extremely hard to get these numbers. You can't.
I think the community would tell you that it's better to be on DOE, or historically had been so. And maybe that was 20 or 30% more on DOE historically. I don't know that that's still true.
But in any case, he has 186 PI, 2 months FTE, I'm assuming. I showed you 221 at DOE and 4950, a little bit more with the small labs at labs, so almost 270, but labs are 12 months FTE. If you compare with my 50 million and his 13.
62 million, I thought.
No, it's 50. 62 is with computational AGP. I showed it in the green table. I said it's 62, but in reality, my budget is only 50 because it also the 62 includes also computational AGP, which
well,
is another.
You mean lattice gauge theory?
No, it's another line of budget entirely. It's. It can be big data, computational, some of the computational cosmology goes under that budget.
How much of that is astrophysical cosmology?
Glenn probably knows, because that is not my budget. I don't control that budget. Mm. Yeah.
Anyway,
but in any case, I would agree with you that.
So one of the questions I guess I'm getting at, is there a coordination between DOE and NSF about how you divide this up? Because NSF has certain things that DOE doesn't do, like support.
Exactly. Our mission is different. We support people at liberal arts colleges. We support people at institutions that are historically disadvantaged. We support a lot of outreach activities. That's why a lot of our grant sizes are lower. A lot of our grants are going to places where one wouldn't have a graduate program or even have, therefore, the opportunity to hire graduate students or postdocs.
For example, at DOE, this is the opposite. When we get applications from small colleges without PhD programs or just with a master, the bar to pass is extremely high. It's very rare. It's either people who left larger university and for some personal reason ended up in a small college, but if somebody goes straight from a postdoc to a small college, there's generally not a chance that you'll get a DOE grant.
I guess this question is more relevant for Simona. How does the fact that DOE identified a certain research directions going to affect funding in the future? So you talked about the intensity frontier, you talked about elements of the energy frontier.
In a sense, yes, because this comes from the community. We are mission driven, but we also implement what the community is telling us via a SNOMAS process and a P5 process around what we want to build our research. So yeah, I would expect that if we decide that the intensity frontier is going to be our main area of involvement, there will be a request to build a sound theoretical structure around it. However, I want to caution everybody about too much diversification and frontiers. I mean, it's great to have frontiers, and we were talking with some of you at lunch. It's great to have frontiers, but you don't want to go to the extreme, that then these become different areas where people don't really talk to each other. This was mentioned by Harry, certainly in his message that Joanne showed earlier this morning. And especially in theory, you know, it's difficult to categorize somebody straight into a box because, I mean, you're not people that can easily fit in a box.
Yeah, I might just follow up on that a little bit. I think you heard actually almost a challenge from Simona in her concluding remarks about different areas and the question of whether the level of activity is adequate. I think it also gets to some of this discussion going on in the neutrino community and so on. You might want to express these things here if you're a little uneasy about expressing it in this broader context. I'd certainly be happy, or our committee would certainly be happy to receive comments, you know, in whatever form you wish to communicate with.
So I have one request for the funding agencies. I appreciate that there have been cutbacks and grant reductions when these are made. I mean, and because of time changes, you know, grants have to be started April 1. I believe there have been some young people who have been stressed by this because in the new grant cycle, say the number of students or postdocs may be reduced. If that happens, I earnestly request that the funding agencies consider a one-time bump for those groups which are being cut so that we don't lose young people from the field. So that's.
I mean, as I said, unfortunately, the bridge funding and the regular grant funding comes from the same pot of money. So if you take it from one side, you decrease on the other, or vice versa.
But
so
the person who's
we really, and actually, honestly, this year I was lucky because, I mean, again, our budget is, there are some numbers in the presidential request, but then at the end of the year, we always reorganize the budget somehow in our office to see if there are reserves that we can use on different programs where there is more need. So this issue of the bridge has been a severe issue for all the frontier. So we try to fix it here and there, and hopefully in a couple of years, it'll be gone.
And this is more a question. I'm not sure whether it's a question or a comment. Both in Glenn's talk and in your talk, there was this expression that we are a leader on the intensity frontier and a co-leader, whatever that meant, on the other frontiers. With the at least in Glenn's talk, I think he said something like leadership meant that we get to decide when the program should stop or which direction it should go, as opposed to somebody else in the context of the LHC, if I understood correctly.
No, in the context of the LHC, we don't get to decide. It's CERB who gets to decide.
So
yes.
That was implied as a bad thing. But I would say that, I mean, that's not the only thing that makes us leaders, right? There's something called intellectual.
Oh, I completely agree with you.
It may be a good thing to be a co-leader on a field which is vital and not necessarily a bad thing.
I mean, I think our field is very global these days. I mean, its facilities are becoming increasingly expensive, and we need to collaborate on an international setting. I mean, there's no, but you know, I mean, this is a theme that came in from early this morning. There are those who interpret this as not being leader and those who recognize that this is leadership. I think as a community, we know that we are leader, even if the facilities at CERN. Politicians and the public might not, since they decide on the money. It's important.
May I ask Simona a question? On theory funding, how do you define or distinguish funding for projects from funding for individuals?
Theory doesn't have projects money. Theory is all research.
But you mentioned that there was
But theory is part of the research budget. So in the research budget, you have theory, you have intensity, energy, cosmic, computational HEP that we mentioned before, and accelerator R&D. Research is everything that is conducive to peer review publications like PRL, PRDs, NIMS, this type of activity. Project is generally connected to the experimental world, so for theory doesn't really. I think we only have one, technically one computing project, which is the Lattice QCD initiative, but it's a different project than LHC detector upgrades, for example.
What is your position? establish on non-funding entities like us?
I mean, it's very important to fund TASI, an initiative like CTEC, for example, or large venues for young people. So we are trying to do the best that we can. You know that your path has been a little difficult because we had to first go through our comparative review, and more than that, we had to know what our budget was this year. So, you know, yeah, we might put TASI at the top of the list, but you know, if then we don't have the people that we support for the rest of the program that can come and give lecture, we don't even know if we can fund enough groups. You know, there's a little bit of balance.
They don't have support from the grants of their advisors because there is not enough money in the grants of their advisors. So without support,
But you know, the support comes from the same. It's the same argument. It comes from the same pot of money. So one can give more support at TASI, and then there will be less, even less support for students at their own institutions because it all goes into TASI.
Different agencies can have different views on their priorities. There's no right or wrong answer. It depends on the agency, the mission, the culture of the agency. NSF puts a very high priority on students and training the next generation. That's part of NSF's perceived mission. So I, in following that, support TASI completely, as you know. And I'm very lucky that I'm able to do that, but Simone is absolutely correct. In doing that, I'm taking money out of some group grants, and there are some graduate students who might not get funded through their home institution. That is true. There's only so much money. It's one pot.
Clearly, all of this is part of a bigger picture in the U.S. for science funding that's problematic, and there's not a lot we can do about that. But if we focus more specifically on high energy physics, do any of you have thoughts about effective ways to improve the situation as a community?
Well, I would just, I'll pass the microphone in a minute, but I would just reiterate the things I said at the beginning. Being aggressive about finding money, finding other sources of funding outside of the traditional ones is important. If you haven't, for example, if you're NSF supported and you haven't gone through the NSF website and hunted for new initiatives, you ought to be doing that. And there are many creative ways that I know. I can't tell you individual things because they are private and confidential, but many individuals in our community have doubled or tripled their funding simply by spending an afternoon finding out that there are some new initiatives and going out and making a proposal for them. And I'm really happy that happens. That's money that comes to high energy physics that might have gone somewhere else, and that's good. Be careful not to get double funding for the same research. They'll be very careful about this, but otherwise it's fine, and I think a more aggressive posture is one way we can help to sustain our field financially.
Yeah, I agree with Keith, of course. I mean, I can understand the point that you're doing some HEP specific type of research, so it's difficult to split, and because you might get less funding in HEP because your grant is not as completed as it was before. Another issue that I was mentioning in my concluding slides is that as a community, yes, we have a problem of growing population and not growing resources. So we probably need to do some soul searching and understanding exactly what to do to make us strong. And so one possibility is to keep spreading the wealth. The other possibility is to consolidate. It's a very tough decision. It impacts everybody. It impacts labs, university, everywhere. But somehow, it's the future of our field is at stake. It's the next few years. It's crucial what we decide. I also strongly believe that you should lobby. I can't. as a federal employee, but you can. And, you know, it's the only way. You have to go out and educate your representative, your neighbors. I mean, make science, again, something that inspires. There's a bad climate for science in this country. If you read general newspaper, media, TV, then if you talk with individuals, most of the time they are still impressed. But we need to make that effort. It's past the time that we live in our ivory tower. If we keep doing that, that's it.
Just to follow up on that, and that is part of what I was driving at, if you take the perspective just of, say, high-energy physics, what do you feel are the most effective forms of advocacy that can be effective?
I wish I knew.
Well, it depends who you're talking to and how you want to approach them. In a community of scientists, other scientists in your own department, there are things you wouldn't want to say, but there are things you would want to say to your politician that can be different. You know, what makes us unique? Why are we in this field? I think if we explain the excitement that we felt when we joined this field, I think if we convey that, we will always do a good job.
I'm a little concerned about the rap that theory is getting in physics departments. It's now normal to have to support graduate students either partially or wholly for their careers because high energy physics funding or particle physics funding for theory is so small. In NSF, we're an NSF institution, and I almost wish, and I'll deny this later, but I almost wish that our theory and experimental grants were all in one grant because the flexibility to react to vagaries of annual and triannual ups and downs would project more of a planned front to the rest of my department and allow us to get through times that are hard by sharing. That's not the way in NSF to combine those two functions. They come out of different offices at some level, but as a strategy for the health of the future of the field, that would be useful, I think.
It might be useful, but it's the kind of top-down, you said strategizing, that we respond to proposals.
I know, NSF responds to proposals. But as a former chair, I can tell you that this was a real problem for me to have to try to figure out how to deal with theory graduate students who found themselves without support for a year or a half
right.
a year.
Well,
and to be, at some level, taking money away from new incoming potential graduate students
right.
to support
so
the students
I
that
can,
no longer have
I'll,
funding.
I'll take off my NSF hat and put on my University of Arizona hat, since I am a professor, a theory professor there, and tell you the argument I make in my department, not always successfully. This is not a gift to the high energy theorists that they support our graduate students. This is part of the ecosystem of a physics department. Some people in a physics department require large startups. High energy theorists don't. Some require lots of other things like space, renovation, labs. High energy theorists don't. Instead, part of our needs in this ecosystem of a functioning physics department is that we will have our students TA. And that's not a gift either, because the students are providing a service. They are TAing. Their research has slowed down. Our students are graduating more slowly. There is a sacrifice we're making. But that doesn't erase the fact, hat back on again, that NSF and other federal agencies do need to find a way to support the people who are doing the research that we aim to be supporting. And this is a big problem, and that is why I do want to find, at least in the NSF program, ways to try to reinforce the pipeline and the funding for graduate students. But you see, I'm already at the stage where I'm forced to kill summer salaries or seriously restrict them in order just to keep the numbers of graduate students that we currently support. So these are the competing needs.
I understand.
And I just wanted to explain that whole thing.
I do understand, and I was able to make those arguments when I was chair, but it is a complicated thing, and it's not going to get better, and it's going to be harder to hire new faculty in high energy theory as time goes on if there's an expectation that there's going to be not enough funding to support the graduate students. Our experimental groups all combined together into one grant, and that increased our flexibility from four different grants. I would think that it ought to be possible to do the same with theory in with the experimental grants. But like I said, I'll deny that later as a, something I actually said.
As a graduate student in a big university, I think it's probably possible for my university to accommodate more graduate students, but maybe is it possible for the funding agencies to talk to big universities to accommodate more graduate students by creating graduate assistantships or something?
Okay, well, yeah. At DOE, for example, we had an energy theory fellowship program that unfortunately this year we had to cut because the money was not there. And again, we could have kept that, and that would have meant cutting some other group in some other fashion. Unfortunately, the budget is not increasing. The budget is going down. And 2% without inflation correction is quite a lot. Within 3 or 4 years means getting rid of an entire postdoc or a couple of students. It's the sad reality. So again, it's a problem of population growth and resources that are not there.
Just a question, getting back to the lobbying thing, does the DPF or APS have a lobbying arm that talks to Congress?
Yes, I'm not really an expert on it, but yes, the APS in particular does, and there are opportunities, and I have gone with them in the past. I certainly think if you're, for example, in D.C., there is a lobbying office you can talk to. It's not exactly called a lobbying office, but there are people you can talk to, and you can contact them, and they'll give you, and they also sometimes run actual targeted efforts. I think probably it's time for the bus. So I would like first to thank Simona and Keith for facing us and providing us with all this information. So maybe we'll applause for them one more time. And then I think actually they've also provided us with some specific challenges and issues to consider. And again, I would urge you to get in touch with this panel, to get in touch with them. On the one hand, trying to lobby and trying to improve the funding situation, and there is the other of dealing with our current realities and expressing what you think may be the best ways of coping with them. Is it in summer salaries? Is it decreasing the total number of students in some organized fashion rather than just by some atrophying of individual grants? These are hard issues, and if you have thoughts, I certainly would appreciate hearing them. So at that, I think I should let everybody go to the bus.